Shankaram Parvati Pati Mahadev Sri Shankaram. Namaste, it's Sahara Rose, and welcome back to the Highest Self Podcast, a place where we discuss what makes you your soul's highest evolvement. Before we hop into this episode, I want to share with you that my new book, Eat, Feel Fresh, is now available for pre-order wherever books are sold. It is a plant-based contemporary Ayurvedic cookbook, and so much more than a cookbook, it teaches you how to eat according for your doshic constitution, as well as how to prepare foods for your family when you're all of different doshas. So I share how to cook tridoshically, what that means, how to create a six taste bowl, how to customize each meal according to your dosha to make Ayurvedic cooking so much more approachable and work for today's world. I am also offering a signed book plate, which I will mail to you, a beautiful little oracle card, which I'll also send in the mail to you, as well as 10 bonus recipes that I will email to you as my gratitude for pre-ordering the book. If you don't know about pre-ordering, it really helps for the author because publishers decide how many books they're going to publish based off of how many pre-orders they are. So if you've ever been to a bookstore and you want to order a book and they're like, oh, it's not going to be available for 4 to 6 weeks, that's because they weren't aware of how many people would have wanted the book, so there weren't enough in print. And I don't want that to happen to anyone. I want the book to be available. So by pre-ordering the book, that's going to allow them to print more copies of the book and have it be available to more people. And I would be so grateful for you. It's the same cost. You can do it on Amazon, wherever you buy your books. And as my gift, well, I will send you my signed book plate, sign it with my very own hands, my card to you, as well as 10 bonus recipes. So head over to my website and iamsaharrose.com, and that's where you will submit your receipt. This episode is brought to you by Silver Fern Probiotic. It is so important that we have healthy gut bacteria because our serotonin, the happy neurotransmitter, originates from our gastrointestinal tract. So when there are imbalances in the gut, that can lead to brain fog, depression, mood swings, and even anxiety. Silver Fern Probiotic helps restore the growth of good microbes in your flora so you are able to fight off anxiety and depression, as well as IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and candida. You can head over to silverfernbrand.com and use the code Sahara for 15% off your order. And my favorite part of Silver Fern is it's able to withstand the harsh climate of your gut, which is hot and acidic, unlike other very sensitive, only refrigerated probiotics, which are not able to withstand that temperature in there. So listen to episode 110. I interview the founder, Charity Light, and she really educates us on digestive health. And check out silverfernbrand.com with coupon code Sahara. And we are back with part two with our interview with Luke Story. If you didn't tune into the last episode, we dove deep into Luke's incredible story. And by the way, his last name really is Story, but with an E. We spoke about how he overcame addiction to drugs and alcohol holistically through meditation, yoga, and lifestyle. And now in this episode, we're going to dive deeper into where he is now and his current passions and what he's doing to treat his body right. So we talk all about biohacking. Biohacking is a terminology that we kind of hear a lot about, but we don't really know what it is. It's basically, as he describes, hacking your biology. It's not something that I practice personally, but it is a very big wellness trend. And I wanted to include that on the Highest Self podcast in case anyone is interested in that. It is like a kind of turn into a very synthetic thing. So you just have to make sure you're doing it still holistically. There are ways to hack your biology with still using natural herbs and foods. And I mean, it's, you know, to each their own, in my opinion. Our biology is perfect and doesn't need hacking, but I understand where it comes from. And I think a lot of the tools that they're using are really interesting, but it's a lot of tools, a lot of gadgets. I went over to Luke's and he had me set me up on all these like machines that were like, I don't know, balancing my chakras apparently and all this stuff, which is always a cool experience. And it's amazing. And I've seen how much it's changed his life. So I think we all have to find our own wellness groove. And for some of us, it's Ayurveda and being super holistic. And for others of us, it's more of the biohacking and the technology and the gadgets. And you have to find what works with you. So I love sharing every type of background on the Highest Self podcast because it's not about just what works for me. It's about you finding what works with you. So Luke shares with us all about biohacking, and we really geek out on water. Water is extremely important. It is the foundation of us. We are 78% water. So it's so important that we're consuming the right kind of water for our life. And I believe when I recorded this episode, I was not using my Berkey filter yet. Now I have a Berkey filter, which is a good water filtration system. That's what I'm personally using, just so I can throw that in before the episode starts. Luke suggests actually getting spring water either from a spring, he actually goes to a spring himself, or to order from a place that delivers spring water in glass bottles. So that's another option for you guys if you want. I use the Berkey filter because it's a lot more affordable than that. He spends a good amount of money on his water every month, and just for me, that's not as high of a priority, so I use the Berkey filter, and it gets rid of everything. I'm not sponsored by them, but just so you guys have an option, so you're not like super confused of like, I don't know what to do. I'm using that, and I also add trace minerals to my water every day, just in the cups of water I drink, trace minerals to remineralize the water content. Because the reason why people get spring water is because the water that we receive is demineralized. And if we don't have those minerals, we're going to end up dehydrated, even though we're drinking, which is why oftentimes you're drinking water, you're still thirsty, because your actual organs are dehydrated because they're not absorbing that water. So we need to add trace minerals back in, because our soil is depleted from minerals that it used to be rich in. Before, just from eating our foods, we got the minerals that we needed, and we only drank spring water because there was nothing else available to us. But now most of us are drinking tap water or bottled water in plastic. I definitely do not recommend anything in plastic for environmental and personal reasons. Anything that you drink in a plastic bottle, that plastic upon filling it up with water was heated. So it is emitting BPA, which is a toxic compound, into your water, which you are then drinking. So I do not recommend plastic. It's an endocrine disruptor, can be related to cancers. They're doing research on that now. So I don't recommend using plastic. It's also really bad for the environment. Imagine if everyone just drank out of little plastic water bottles, how much plastic waste there is. Only 10% of plastic is ever recycled. The oceans are full of plastic. It is causing the fish to eat the microplastics, which are disintegrated pieces of plastic that the fish then eat, then we're eating the fish, so we're ingesting the plastic, which is the endocrine disruptor. So it's not a good choice to drink out of plastic bottles. So that is like, if you're drinking out of plastic bottles every day, that is just one thing you should change. So even if you just switch to, if you want to buy still water from an outside place, get them in glass, that can get expensive. So that's why I recommend just having a filter, a high quality filter at home. I like the Berkey because it's just the best one out there and it lasts. You don't have to change the filter often. And, you know, for example, these Brita filters that you just have, like this little pitcher, it's very, very lightly filtering the water, but it's not taking out the fluoride and the really, you know, dangerous stuff that's in our water system today. So I recommend that, but he talks to us all about water, spring water, that stuff. So geek out on it and enjoy this episode. Talk to us a little bit more about where you are now. What is biohacking? It's such a buzz term, and I feel like a lot of us are like, what does that even mean?
It's funny because when I first heard the term biohacking, this is maybe going back 5 years or so, mm-hmm. I was like, who are these like computer nerds? It was like real nerdy guys that were into health. And then as I started to explore it a bit more, I found that, that biohacking thing, I've been doing that for, you know, whatever it was, 15 years at that point or something. Mm-hmm. And so now it's cool because it's being adopted. It was very much a guy-centric thing too.
Right.
It's like Silicon Valley nerd guys are right. Like, oh, I'm getting my labs done and now I'm taking charge of my health. It's super
yeah,
nerdy.
I just think like Dave Asprey.
Yeah, totally. He's like, you know, the modern sort of leader of that movement in a sense. And I love his work and I've learned a lot from him. But now it's cool because girls in the yoga and meditation and consciousness realm are kind of into some of the
like,
practices.
Like, MCT oil in my chai latte.
Exactly, yeah. So it's something that's cool that's becoming more widespread and popular. Mm-hmm. But I look at biohacking as just, back in the day, we just called you a health nut. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're the person that takes a bunch of vitamins. And
but are there any like specifics like biohacking versus health?
Yeah, for sure. So I think if you want to split hairs a little more, other than someone just being into working on their health and paying mm-hmm. attention to their body, biohacking has a little bit more to do with applying some science to it and also doing some tracking. Mm-hmm. So typically like a biohacker has some sort of issue that they're trying to overcome or mm-hmm. some part of their life that they want to enhance or optimize. So they learn some tools, they track their progress as they apply those tools, and they come out with a metric by which to determine what works and what doesn't. Okay. So if you think about the word hacker, it's learning how the operating system of computers, you know, work, and then you know how to get in there and manipulate things and operate within those confines. And so looking at the human body in its complexity in that way and learning the systems of the body and the chemistry and physiology and all of that, and learning how to apply different technology, supplementation, lifestyle hacks to optimize that system. And so I think that's why it comes from sort of a nerdy perspective. Mm-hmm. Breaking that down further, just taking the tracking piece aside, tracking would be any devices that you wear in your body mm-hmm. that tell you your heart rate and blood sugar and your sleep stats and all that. And then the other part.
It can just tell your blood sugar without pricking you?
There's different devices and stuff. Okay. I'm not that much. That's more of the quantified self side of it. So quantifying everything that you're doing. I just quantify most things on how I feel. I don't track that many things because mm-hmm. I'm just on to the next thing and whatever.
Right, and you're just intuitive.
I don't have a Fitbit like, oh, today I took 4,900 steps. Like, I don't care. Like, did I feel like I moved today? Yeah. So there's that side of biohacking where there's the quantified part. And then you're also generally, in terms of quantification, working with functional medicine practitioners, mm-hmm. which are kind of like naturopath doctors that work on the premise that you want to get to the root problem of your symptoms and address that root problem using lifestyle change or supplementation. If it's incorrectable, then as a very last result, you move to a pharmaceutical or surgical model mm-hmm. or solution, right? Mm-hmm. So that's functional medicine, and that sort of goes hand in hand with biohacking, where you're testing your heavy metals and your gut biome and your blood and really looking at the reality of the numbers mm-hmm. and the stats there, and then you're making adjustments and pulling levers by which to upgrade, right? Mm-hmm. So that's more on the techie side. In a zoomed out, more broad perspective of biohacking, to me, you have sort of three elements of it, and that's the mind, body, and spirit. So the practice of the type of thinking that you participate in, right? Mm-hmm. And really paying attention to that mindset, motivation, all of that. And then the spirit, of course, is getting in tune and in touch with that part of you that is not physical, the metaphysical. And then the physical part has within it a couple different aspects. One would be the food you eat, the supplementation, the water, so the stuff you take internally, like your internal environment. Mm-hmm. And then the next piece of biohacking would be your external environment. Mm-hmm. And this has to do with the exposure to EMFs, electronics, lighting, different technology that you can use, mm-hmm. getting in the sun, grounding your body, being in nature, mm-hmm. you know, going, doing ice baths, all of these sort of physical and lifestyle practices. So to me, a true biohacker is beyond just bio, because bio is sort of just life or biology, but outside of that is the metaphysical and the spiritual part, and that's the premise of my whole teaching, and my podcast is all centered around addressing all of those areas. Mm. So the biohacking thing is, to me, a piece of the puzzle, but it's a little limited unless it includes, you know, all your psychology, your state of mind, the framework by which you live, like, what laws that are non-physical do you live by? What mm-hmm. principles? Mm. You know, like Ayurveda is a set of principles, you know. Right. It's a system of truths that you can apply to your lifestyle, and then it has a positive impact. And there are tons of systems like that that work. Mm. But biohacking's got to be holistic to me. So it's almost like sometimes I call it spirit hacking. It's like, what's the fastest track to having a spiritual experience? For some people, that's psychedelics. And for some of us, it's meditation and psychotherapy and all of that, but really getting in tune with who you really are.
So can you give us some examples of like biohacking techniques we can use for the mind, body, and spirit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the number one, and it's, I think we hear so much about it that a lot of people ignore it, but for your whole mental and emotional and spiritual self is meditation, of getting a real practice that's not just, oh, I'm just sitting here and I'm going to be quiet for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. It's a good starting mm-hmm. point, but getting a bona fide practice that you can take with you.
So what would that look like?
The one that I gravitated toward eventually, after just patching together different practices and using apps. And mm-hmm. I mean, back in the day, I used to meditate to like cassette tapes of guided meditations and stuff,
you know,
Deepak and, you know, Deepak and Wayne Dyer and Eckhart Tolle and Byron Katie, a lot of the great teachers that have put out a lot of audio, Abraham Hicks, just all that stuff. I pieced it together then eventually.
I would spaz out meditating to Abraham Hicks.
No. Well, you know what I'm saying. I mean, just,
but yeah, it's just a transmission.
Yeah. Just learning about, I guess, the metaphysical and spiritual part, and then following any sort of teaching like that, whether it be audio or not, and doing hemi-sync, like brain hemispheric synchronization. And
how do you do that?
Have you heard of binaural beats? Oh, there's things you can listen to that synchronize your brain hemispheres, or that induce different brain states and brain waves, like theta waves or alpha waves or whatever it is that you're looking for.
Okay.
Delta waves, like things that just relax
audio.
You. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Things that relax you. After years of just, you know, kind of cowboys and Indians lawlessness in terms of a practice, you know, it's the wild west of spiritual exploration. Right. I finally zeroed in on my teacher, Jeff Kober, who's been on my show, and he teaches something called Vedic meditation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very ancient tradition and comes from the same lineage as TM, Transcendental Meditation. I guess, you know, same.
Like Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Yeah, it comes from that whole lineage, but then they split off and there's kind of two different organizations. But essentially it's a mantra-based meditation that you do 20 minutes a day, twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
For those listening that don't know what the mantra is, you've heard the word, but in this context, it means a Sanskrit word or sound that you repeat silently in the very dark recesses of your mind, very, very subtly. And it has the effect of distracting your mind from the thinking and from the body and from this plane so that you can transcend, hence transcendental meditation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the mantra has been really effective for me. When you learn in that lineage, you're given a specific mantra for you that's chosen by the teacher. And so that method works really well. And some people use some of the Buddhist practices of, you know, being mindful of your breath and watching your breath. That works too. But I find the mantra really, I mean, I've been doing it for so many years now that it just like instantaneously drops me into that place.
Mm.
You know, I can be pretty much anywhere, any time of the day. There might be 5 minutes where I'm a little wound up.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me a minute to drop in.
So is it like a long mantra that they give you, or is it just like
imagine like the word om. I don't know other ones actually, but mine
like
is
vom, rom, along the chakras.
Yeah, exactly.
So they give one to you based off of maybe your chakra that's out of balance.
Yeah, I don't know how they pick it. It's weird. Like I've never actually asked my teacher.
Yeah, what does this mean?
Yeah, he'd probably answer like, why don't you learn how to be a teacher? You know, but being a Vedic teacher, it takes like 5 years. You got to go to India a bunch of times.
For sure.
You can't just like even when I lead meditations now, I never say, oh, this is Vedic meditation, because I'm not really authorized.
Right.
Same with Kundalini yoga. I mean, I've been practicing that forever, and I know a lot of great Kriyas and stuff. I can do some cool stuff that comes from Kundalini, but I would never say, oh, I'm a Kundalini teacher, because I haven't done the teacher training.
Right.
With those things, like, I'm just like, why take the time? I just want to get the, you know, the nuts and bolts of it in a way that I can responsibly pass it on to other people.
And they're, you know, everything's a remix, you know, it's
totally.
Like that comes from TM and then you can create your own. And that's the whole point of life. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I interviewed Guru Singh, who's a big Kundalini yoga teacher, the other day. And he was, and I said, well, you know, in terms of being qualified to teach Kundalini yoga, he goes, dude, when Yogi Bhajan was around, the teacher training was like, you came to class for like 3 weeks. And then he's like, you're a teacher. Move to New Mexico and start an ashram.
Right.
You know, it's just like, there was no, you know, format.
It's so funny, right? That's like, did you do your 200-hour registered yoga teacher? And it's like, yeah, it's just some people have it in them that they're meant to be teachers of anything. Whatever you're learning, you want to teach it.
Right. Right. So in terms of on the spiritual plane, I would say meditation is super important. Something else biohacking wise that's been really useful for me is neurofeedback.
Mm.
And neurofeedback is a brain state training technique. Mm-hmm. It's based on technology that goes on your head.
Did you go to that place in like Northern California and like Dave Asprey's
40 place? Years of Zen? I did. Yeah.
How is that?
Actually in Seattle now. When I went, it was in Sedona. This is a few years ago. Yeah. That's a super intense alpha wave training.
Mm-hmm.
When you do neurofeedback, it has different, there's different methods, of course, by different practitioners and scientists that have come up with different protocol, but essentially it's all meant to induce or teach you how to induce certain brain wave states.
Mm-hmm.
So your brain wave, you can think about it as an instrument. And so your brain produces different frequencies depending on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So when you're asleep, you're in hopefully delta, like you're totally unconscious. And mm-hmm. then there's theta, which is kind of in and out of sleep feeling. Mm-hmm. It's that great daydreamy, half awake, half asleep feeling, which is like my favorite feeling in the world. Okay. That's what like, certain drugs do that at a level before you're, you know, before they stop working in that way. So there's all these different brainwave states.
So what's meditation?
Well, meditation, from my understanding, depending on what stage you are, will be ideally theta. That's the transcendent place. Okay. But also alpha, which is like calm, relaxed, alert.
What is just creative. Like regular life?
Beta.
Beta.
Out doing stuff, running errands, working on the computer. Okay. Beta's like fast twitch. You know, the mind's moving fast. You can switch from task to task. Like you're alert, awake.
Is there something that's like anger?
I think that that's high beta because within, I'm for anyone listening that's like a neuroscientist, you probably want to punch me right now. I'm totally butchering this, I'm sure, but I'm vaguely right. Mm-hmm. Okay. There are different brain waves, but then there are also different degrees and ratios of brain waves, right? So it's not like an either or, and you know, it's not one or the other.
Yeah, you're transitioning.
Yeah, and you're oscillating between them, and you have varying degrees. So you can have like really high degree of alpha waves, and then at the same time some beta, and there's always like a bit of a blend. Mm-hmm. But neurofeedback in 40 years of Zen specifically was about upregulating alpha, which is a really good conscious brain state to be in. It's the feeling. Alpha is like, if you want to sense the feeling of when you're in alpha, it's when you're in flow state. So you're recording, you're remembering the questions.
You know,
when you're in that zone.
In Sanskrit, it's called Kriya.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
The word Kriya means flow.
Oh, dude, I didn't know that. Sick. Yeah. I love learning stuff when I'm on shows. So yeah, so that's something that's been very meaningful in terms of the spiritual.
So how do they see what it is? Like when you
they hook electrodes up to your brain. First, you'll do what's called.
Can you do it at home, or you have to go somewhere?
There are home units where you can buy like a PC that's.
I've
loaded
heard of like an
it.
App, but I don't. And it's like, oh, you just connect it to your head, but I don't know how really accurate it is.
Neurofeedback is a little more complex, I think, than one could self-administer through an app. I mean, the devices cost a few $1,000s. Typically, the treatments cost a few $100s, depending on how many you do. It's pretty serious stuff. So I don't know if it's something you could like figure out that easily on your own for inexpensive. But that's been helpful and meaningful because it's like you have the spiritual side and meditating and all that stuff is great, but you also have to have some sort of mental capacity and framework to hold all of the stuff that you're learning.
Right.
So I think it's meaningful.
And it's a good response to be like, wow, this is actually working. I'm actually seeing my brain is changing. Because sometimes we're like, am I meditating? I'm not really sure. And then you're like there and then you pull yourself out of it because you're like, I'm meditating. And it's like this constant.
We interrupt this episode with a 60-second break so I can tell you about an amazing product. So we've all been constipated before, a lot of Vata's listening, and we all know how horrible it feels to feel bloated and sluggish and just not like your healthiest and happiest self. And in fact, the average person holds about 10 to 15 pounds of toxins in their colon, which leads to a whole host of issues later on in life. So it's really important that we naturally detoxify these toxins, which Ayurveda recommends doing every season. So I highly recommend using an all-natural tea. I really like Teami blends. You can head over to Teami. TEAMIblends.com and use coupon code Sahara for 25% off any orders above $49.99. They have a great 30-day detox program. Again, all natural products, and it can really help your digestion, especially if you're feeling a little Vata imbalanced. Now, let's get back to this episode.
Another good biohack for consciousness is float tanks.
I need to try one of those.
Yeah, sometimes they're called a sensory deprivation chamber or sensory deprivation tank. And they have them, they've kind of blown up, which is annoying because 10 years ago when I found out about them, I tried to get my brother to go in. I was like, dude, let's get a space in Hollywood, like by Erewhon, like on Beverly. Let's have a float center, like a biohacking center. And, you know, we didn't have the money or bandwidth to do it. And now they've popped up all over and they're quite successful, which is cool. But I was like, ah, man. had the idea. But float tanks essentially are a little room or pod that you get in that's got about 15 inches of water in it, and the water is really saturated with Epsom salt, so it becomes buoyant, like the Dead Sea. And you go in this dark little chamber, and when I say dark, it's dead dark, like you keep, literally can't tell if your eyes are open or closed. There's no light and ideally no sound. And the water that you're in allows you to float, which creates the sense of zero gravity. So I wouldn't say there's no gravity, because obviously gravity is still present, but you lose the experience of gravity. And you also lose the experience of the water or the air or the sensation of it, because the water and the air are the same degree as your skin. So it's very like temperature controlled in the water and the air, so that it enables you to lose a sense of your physicality. So it's like a forced meditation, is the way I look at it. Now, you could be a non-meditator and go float, and you're going to trip out in there.
I've heard of people, like, freaking out, like, wanting to get out.
I mean, that's the thing. You'd have to be someone who likes yourself and is well acquainted with yourself.
For drug addiction treatment, it could be helpful.
Amazing, yeah. There's so much anxiety inherent in all addictions.
Right.
Anxiety and trauma and depression and all of that. So, yeah, float tanks are just the
most...
So
can you fall asleep or...
Yeah, I always fall asleep. I go usually for two-hour floats. There's two places you can go in L.A. that are great. One's called Float Lab in Westwood. They have a bunch of tanks, so it's easy to, you know, book a slot there, usually one day
just
advance.
Booking a slot at the float tank.
Yeah, and then there's another one in Pasadena called Just Float, which is the world's biggest float center, actually, and they have, I think, 15 rooms or something.
They're going to have, like, water parks. It's just like a floating pond.
Well, here's the thing. It's trippy when you look at the, I did a show on this too. Everything I talk about, I've done some show on at some point, because obviously I'm obsessed about all these things. But floating came out in the 60s, and it was partly made popular because of the psychedelic exploration movement, and then became more popular as LSD became illegal, basically, and less accessible. But people like to trip and they wanted to explore consciousness. So there was this strange period where the psychedelics and float tanks kind of merged. And a lot of people into floating were experimenting with psychedelics and floating.
Interesting.
So late 60s becomes more popular during the 70s, gaining in popularity. Toward the late 70s and early 80s, HIV hit and AIDS hit, right? And then people, there was a lot of fear about that, and it was very misunderstood in terms of how you would contract it. So nobody wanted to get into a tank of water that someone else had just been in. And so the float, it was, you know, just AIDS paranoia. And so it died out in the early 80s and really went away for a long time. It was very much a fringe practice that like really,
because you know, do they change out the water or they don't need
they do.
To?
They do. They change the water out between every person. Now, here's the thing. Depending on the facility, the water will be cleaned to a lesser or greater degree. The two places that I just mentioned are hardcore sanitary. They filter the water. They hit it with ultraviolet and ozone. So essentially, like, no germs can possibly live in between the sessions. So you go in the water, and then you close your little door, and you hear this red light comes on, and it's cleaning itself. So it's the same water that someone was just in, but it's been highly sanitized and filtered.
Got it.
Yeah, ideally. But anyway, people got afraid, and so no one wanted to do it. The industry died out. Then with the biohacking scene and the popularity of that, the float tanks came back into vogue, and now they're just exploding in popularity because the benefits are amazing. I mean, it's just, it's so relaxing, it's so good for your body, and it's just, I don't know, it's one of my favorite things ever.
I can't wait to try.
It is one of those things, though, that some people go, I always recommend go three times. If the first time, I mean, you hated it, maybe give up. But if you're like, eh, I don't know, I'm indifferent, I don't get it, go one more time and then one more time. After three floats, you'll know if it's for you or not. If by three you're like, I still hate this, or I'm just bored, I don't get
it. Then go three more times until you like it.
You probably won't. But same with Kundalini yoga. For some people, they come in and are like, this is so weird, I don't get it. I'm like, just come three times and then you'll know. And a lot of things are like that. There's some power in the number three, I find. Most things you do, try three times. Like surfing, I tried once, for example, and I was like, I hate this shit. And I never did it again.
You know.
But had I tried three times, maybe with three teachers or three different, you know, bodies of water, it might have stuck. I went once and I gave up. So I always say, you know, do things three times. So neurofeedback, meditation, float tanks are physical activities, so to speak, but I think ones that serve the consciousness powerfully. Then to move into still environmental, not going in the inner body.
Yeah, what do you do with like your cell phone, your laptop, Wi-Fi?
Yeah, here's the thing is that your immediate environment very much has an effect on you. So things like cell phones, Wi-Fi, blue light at night, which is like basically any light that's not orange or red that you see with your eyes at night, mm-hmm. is really bad for your biology. So
do you think even like switching on your iPhone to like the like night setting is enough, or put like a case on there?
The night setting is better than nothing. I would keep it on all the time. My computer always has this yellow-orange tint on it, unless mm-hmm. I'm retouching or, you know, something where I actually need to see true color. Mm-hmm. But the spectrum of light that we're typically exposed to on devices and mm-hmm. just headlights from cars, every store you go into, everywhere you go, the lighting is really toxic now.
Right.
Because it's energy efficient.
Have you heard about like LED lights actually being like toxic?
LED lights suck really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're the worst. Well,
and that we need like candle lit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So iridescent lighting.
It's, I think it's incandescent. Yeah. Yeah. It's super simple. If you want to solve the lighting thing, and anyone that doesn't know what I'm talking about, they could save a 3-hour episode here, but just Google dangers of blue light and okay. you're going to be like, oh, crap. There's thousands of scientific studies about why fluorescent, LED, all the modern lighting that we use is really bad for your brain and specifically your sleep.
Okay.
So an easy fix is just on your phone and your computers, you can install, well, you have night shift on your iPhone. Mm-hmm. You can also tweak the settings on your iPhone to make it super red at night.
Okay.
Which you can turn on and off. It's difficult to explain in a mm-hmm. microphone, but you can Google like how to make your iPhone red. Mm-hmm. But just doing night shift, and then on computers, you can use a program called Iris.
Okay.
The website's iris.co. I think it's like $10, and it's got an automatic setting on it that just makes your computer not harmful to your eyes.
Love it.
Whether it's day or night. And then you can turn it off if you need to see true color. Like sometimes you're posting a photo or
right.
you know, working on your website, you don't want shit to be all orange like and weird looking.
Yeah. Is orange.
yeah. I mean, and I have all these blockers on my phone and stuff, and then I look at my Instagram on someone else's phone, I'm like, oh man, everything's so blue on your phone, you know. So I can't tell. And so really just educating yourself in terms of blue light exposure at night is huge. And then with your cell phone, man, I'm so sorry, people, but it's really bad for you to have your cell phone on and on your body. The right. worst thing ever is like talking on your phone with it touching your head. I mean, honestly, it's just the research is there. It's not like a hippie paranoia conspiracy. It's like,
I feel like,
no, it's bad for
like
you.
My head hurts if I put my cell phone
on. Bad for you.
Yeah.
And Wi-Fi, even like you have your router over here, which yeah. your bedroom's probably.
I know
on the
I
other
put
side.
Like this like tourmaline crystal near it. I don't know if that's helping.
You know, there's a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. People always ask me which one works. I go, dude, put every goddamn crystal you got. What I did in my place at home is it's a little bit of a hassle, but my main computer's in my office, and that's just hardwired Ethernet, mm-hmm. right? So I don't need Wi-Fi in there. Mm-hmm. But there is a Wi-Fi router. And so what I did is I just ran an Ethernet cable it's a 110-foot cable I got on Amazon mm-hmm. from my office all the way out into the living room.
Okay.
So as I sit on my couch, as we're sitting here, there's like a cable stuffed in the cushions.
Okay. And you plug it into your laptop?
Yeah, I just have an adapter for my iMac and I just plug it in. It's not because I'm that paranoid about the Wi-Fi in my house. It was also about speed. Because mm-hmm. once you get hooked on Ethernet and you go back on Wi-Fi, it sucks ass.
Right.
Unless you're right next to your router. So now pretty much I don't have Wi-Fi on in the house, which okay. is great, but I live in an apartment and all my neighbors do.
Yeah.
So you in this building, it's like, is it going to make a huge difference to turn your router off when right. like you probably have a neighbor with a router right there also?
I know. I put on like airplane mode when I sleep. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah. So
really
here's
helping.
What you do. Here's what you do. So you just get a little timer for your router. Mm-hmm. That does Christmas lights or light, you know, like those light switch timers when okay. you're on vacation. You can okay. get them on Amazon, just light timer. And then just set it to go off at night whenever you typically go to sleep uh-huh. and then have it turn back on in the morning. That way at
well,
least...
Well, yeah, my Wi-Fi is actually connected to like the light thing, but I never turn it off. But I should act because yeah. I feel like then you have to reboot it, but maybe it's worth
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it's if you can, at least having the Wi-Fi off when you sleep is good because mm-hmm. when you sleep is the time when your body regenerates. And mm-hmm. if you're going to have like a healthy environment or spend any time in your house, I always recommend doing everything you can to make your room safe and as holistic as possible, mm-hmm. where the room where you sleep, because we're sort of resilient. We sleep to become resilient during the day. So mm-hmm. you're around Wi-Fi and cell towers and, you know, all this crazy radiation and Fukushima and whatever the hell else is going on. But when your nervous system is in fight or flight and when your brain's in beta, when we're in our waking state, running around making shit happen, we're much more protected through our own biology yeah. and our own energy field. But when you sleep, you go into rest mode and then you become very passive energetically and susceptible to frequencies from Wi-Fi and having your cell phone next to you on your bed. So
right.
that's, you know, I think the sleep, man, you have to have an air purifier. It has to be dark, cold. Mm-hmm. You got to really optimize that environment and minimize the EMFs, electromagnetic fields too, at least when you sleep. Also grounding really helps with that too.
Yeah. I have a grounding mat. Have
yeah.
you tried those?
Yeah. I have yeah. them all over the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a grounding sheet at the foot of my bed. That's
Deepak Chopra is very big on grounding. He yeah. sent it to me. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You know, people, this like the fake news that's against natural health is right. so annoying sometimes because there'll be these propaganda smear campaigns against. Right now, there's a big one on spring water. I'm about to fight back and do like a 3-part series on why spring water is awesome and not a toxic trend, is what the news is calling it. Same thing with grounding technology.
Oh, because people are into the raw water yeah. now. Yeah.
And there's a big conspiracy that it's bad for you. It's like so maddening. Because it's if you get it from the right spring and the right, right. source, it's literally the safest water on the planet.
So do you go pick it up yourself at a well?
Yes. I do two things. Well, not a well, a spring.
There's a spring, difference. Okay.
Yes. A spring is where God or nature has decided that water is ripe and ready to come out, and it pushes it out of the top of a mountain, ideally. That's where the higher water is usually cleaner.
Okay.
And nature has put that water through the hydrological cycle, mm. right? And so nature has said that water is now ready for harvest, and it spews it out the top of a mountain. It trickles down, becomes a stream, like a spring. Then the spring becomes a brook. The brook becomes the creek. The creek becomes the river. The river becomes the ocean. The ocean becomes the clouds. The clouds become snow and rain that go over the mountain and drop that water back down. It's a big cycle. It's okay. actually a circle if you can visualize it. So true spring water is water that nature has purified and cleaned mm-hmm. under the ground, then through hydrological pressure pushes it back up a little leak in the earth, mm. which is what we call a spring. Mm-hmm. A well or an aquifer is where man goes, we know there's water down there. We're going to drill into that shit like yeah. drilling for oil. Mm-hmm. Not that that makes that water bad, but it's a little,
it's just
slightly
not ready,
lower
yeah.
grade. So what they're trying to do to discredit the spring water thing is they're saying that that water is full of toxins and poisons and heavy metals and bad bacteria and all uh-huh. this stuff. And it's essentially dirty water, like water from a creek or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
True spring water is not like that. There's also kind of a smear against grounding and earthing products, as right. you mentioned. And it's framed as if it's some new age conspiracy trend yeah. that wackos are doing, like sleeping on grounding sheets and using yeah. grounding mats and stuff. Here's the thing I'll say about grounding and water. We would not be sitting here having this conversation if our lineage of humans that came before us
right.
didn't drink spring water mm-hmm. and be connected to the earth. Like mm-hmm. literally that's why, mm-hmm. well, two of the reasons why we're here. So it's not a trend. The trend is actually to become disconnected from the earth's electrical and magnetic mm-hmm. field when mm-hmm. you're not grounded, mm-hmm. that's the trend. The trend is called wearing rubber-soled shoes, never yeah, touching the ground.
Exactly.
It's called riding around in cars that have rubber non-grounded tires.
Right.
So in the last 100 years, human beings, for the first time in 2 million years of us being here, have become literally disconnected from the Mother Earth and mm-hmm. from the planet. That's the trend. For the first time in the past few hundred years, I guess in Egypt, they were moving water around and, you know, developing some sort of plumbing system. But let's just say for the past couple hundred years, human beings have primarily had water that came from the earth. And then we transition to water that goes through pipes in these municipal mm-hmm. systems. So drinking tap water or filtered tap water is actually the new trend.
Right.
It's not.
So do you think these, like, because yeah. I have this filter that's like supposed to make it alkaline, has like 6 stages. Do you think that's really helping?
There's a lot of different filters in terms of water. I mean, I'm a super water geek. I would venture to say humbly, if I can, I'm an expert on water.
Like the best drinking water. People ask me water all the time, and I was getting spring water delivered to me, but it was in plastic that I was like, yeah. I don't know if this is good.
If you're in California, the company that I use is called Live Spring Water.
Okay.
And the owner is a great friend of mine, and unfortunately, he's the subject subject of a lot of fake news stories right now. There's actually thousands of articles that have come out about him that are fake news. Like, literally, the reporters call him, he says something, and they take what he says and chop it up and make it say something else. Mm-hmm. Like, just deliberate lies, just so ratchet. Poor guy, because he's just a really sweet guy and a great business person. He found a great spring in Oregon. He delivers water to people like me, and now they're trying to discredit him for no apparent reason. I think there's a larger conspiracy behind it, to be honest.
Right.
Because he's empowering people to be in charge of their own water.
I saw this website that there's like nearby springs
Find
you can
a spring.
Go to. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I was like, what do? Just like show up with all these buckets and like drag them
That's
to my
exactly
car.
That's exactly what you do.
Yeah.
I have a video
so
on YouTube. If you search Luke's story, maybe put in your show notes, but it's if you just search Luke's story spring water.
Okay.
I made a whole little documentary video. It's about 20 minutes about how you go out and find your own water.
So do you actually just bring buckets and like fill
I
up
bring
your car?
SUV full of 5-gallon glass carboys.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the carboys typically at like home brewing stores.
Okay.
And because you don't want water and plastic don't mix very well because water is adsorbent, meaning it pulls from whatever it's sitting in.
Okay.
And so when you have water in plastic, that water is actually like siphoning out xenoestrogens, which are estrogen mimicking compounds.
Even like a hard plastic?
To me, like, I think the hard plastic ones are more inert. They're going to leach less. Like, think of the worst water bottle would be one of those little crinkly Arrowhead bottles. Like, you could just tell that shit's too flimsy to be good, you know? So when I travel at airports, for example, I usually get Fiji because it's in, like, that hard plastic bottle.
Right.
I don't know the science on this, but it seems like it's more stable than some of the cheaper plastics.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Like, you know when you go to, like, you know that those, like, sort of milky, opaque gallon jugs of Arrowhead water you sell at the grocery store?
Yes.
Like an old milk carton?
Yeah.
Those, to me, seem, like, super toxic and flimsy.
Right.
Like, water in those, I would be like, meh.
Yeah.
Because they taste like plastic,
too. Some of the super cheap bottled water that's just, like, purified water, the plastic is just, it's breaking while the water's
you
in
can
there.
Tell,
you know,
right?
You go to the 99-cent store and that water.
And, you know, the weird thing about what breaks plastic down to is light. It's UV light. It's not actually heat.
Mm.
You'd think you'd be weirded out. Oh, there's a case of bottled water that's been on a shelf in a warehouse.
Right.
And it was in the summer and it was hot. That doesn't actually matter.
Or like leaving it in your car.
Yeah.
I that's
what
really
gets
bad.
It though is the light.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can see this if you put anything plastic out in your backyard and you leave it there for a few months, it literally just disintegrates from sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Sunlight is oxidizing. So sunlight causes things to break down. It's just the way the universe is designed. So plastic is eventually, it's oil, you know, it's crude oil and they turn into plastic. And so oil, like water, has its own cycle and human beings help that cycle along by extracting oil, making plastic out of it. And then the sun melts that oil back to from whence it came, which is back into the earth. It's weird. Isn't that trippy?
Yeah, it's crazy.
So
I
you
mean,
don't
I never
be...
think of plastic as oil, but yeah, that's what
it is. Everything, like half the shit in front of us right now is made of crude oil. It could be made from hemp.
Right.
Even more effectively.
Yeah. But that's a whole other conspiracy.
yeah. So, but with drinking water out of plastic, like I don't want to be part of the oil cycle in my body.
Right.
You know? So whenever possible, I get my own water or I have it delivered. But that's a huge piece. But it's not the point I like to make.
So
is
does
that,
he deliver in glass?
Yeah. He's got, it's really cool. And are you familiar with Dr. Emoto, the hidden messages in water?
No.
He was a Japanese scientist that did research on water and he's got a book called The Hidden Messages in Water.
Yeah. And what do you
of
think
water?
Of Kangen water?
I went through that phase. Yeah, I wouldn't do that because you're still drinking tap water.
Okay.
Kangen or Kangen water. It's a filter that you hook up to your sink. I bought one years
Japanese,
ago.
It's Japanese, right?
Yeah, it's like a multi-level marketing thing. I bought one. It's $5,000. I tried to sign people up to like make money. It was a whole thing back in the early 2000s. But still, at the end of the day, that's just filtered tap water.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, they
What about
make
a Berkey?
Now, okay, so, you know, it's funny. I need to make a landing page of this, but I actually made a document with, like, the
like
most hardcore...
Like, no one talks about
Dude,
this.
Dude, I made the most hardcore guide to water describing all this with links and stuff. I can share it with you if you want to post it somewhere. I need to just make it into a website page because I just email it to my email list as a free bonus, you know, just to be nice. Like, I need to make content out of that. Here's the hierarchy of water, okay? I can break it down.
Okay. Take notes.
Yeah, so... First thing you got to realize and why I put so much emphasis on water, because back to the biohacking umbrella here that we're under, is that between 70 and 90% of our bodies is water, okay? When you cremate someone, what's left? a few ounces of ashes. That's the carbon that's left over from your skin, ligaments, bones, et cetera, right? So not much of us is actually solid. Most of us is water. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the vessel that we're all gifted with when we are born as a vehicle by which our soul uses to run around the physical plane and get shit done and evolve and grow and whatever our purpose for life is, that vehicle not only runs on water, if you think about a like a car running on gasoline, but a car's not made of gasoline.
Right.
A car has
more
a
like double water.
A car has a combustion engine, and what fuels it, and it derives its energy from the combustion of the gasoline, right? We derive our energy from a number of other things, mitochondria, ATP, et cetera. But what we're actually made of is water. So we don't so much get energy from water.
We just need it to keep the being thing, us. Yeah.
But the engines, the multiple engines within our body, of course, all are sustained partially by water. But we're literally made of water. Like that's what we are. Aside from your spiritualness, which of course is the main part of you, when I look at you, you're a bag of water.
Right.
And so am I. So that's why I put so much emphasis on that. And it's not just like all water is not created equal. And some waters aren't even technically what I would consider water. They're more like a laboratory H2O or something. Mm. So here's the hierarchy, okay? This is just my opinion.
Okay.
I'm not a scientist. So people can take this with a grain of salt. But I think if you just listen to your innate wisdom and common sense, you'll probably arrive at a similar conclusion. Number one, water is water that's been filtered by thousands and thousands of feet of granite, rock, carbon, earth, comes out at the top of a mountain. That's true spring water, okay? So unless that water is near where they did nuclear testing or there's some kind of environmental toxins that got into the aquifer or the water table at that location.
What about like the pollution in the sky, in the clouds?
Acid rain is a huge thing. Not all spring water is that great because if the water is newer in its cycle, remember the hydrological cycle that I described?
Right.
Where, you know, you have the
if it
spring,
hasn't gone
goes down the mountain, goes in the ocean, goes back up into clouds. Okay. Some water is older than others and some water is newer. So there's old springs and there's young springs depending on how long that cycle is. The spring water where I get my water is by scientific estimations at least a thousand, if not tens of thousands of years old in terms of where it is in that cycle. And the water's lab tested for purity. And
is there enough for everyone? Can everyone start drinking?
Yeah, that's the thing. There's actually no shortage of water on the planet. The fucking planet is water, just like our bodies.
But of like this good spring water?
Well, it's going away. But there's like,
should we not release this so we can save water to
ourselves? Just me and you. But see, there's still water within the planet, wherever the hell it is, under the Earth's crust or whatever. I don't know geologically how exactly it works because I'm not an expert on that. But there definitely is water that in our lifetime is not, in post-industrial revolution, has not seen the light of day. It's still old water that was rain 1,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago.
So that cycle takes like thousands of years for one cycle.
On the geography present where the spring site is.
Okay.
So the hierarchy of water is pristine springs are the best.
Okay.
Okay. Then there's various degrees of springs depending on how old the water is.
Like, you know, mountain valley spring water?
Yeah, mountain valley's good. Okay. It's from an aquifer. It's well water.
Okay.
They call it spring water.
Oh.
Yeah, all the bottled water companies back in, I think it was the 90s, lobbied the FDA so they can call whatever water spring water.
Even the one in the glass?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's okay. It's just not truly spring water.
I've been living a lie.
Because remember, the difference between well water and spring water is that well water has to be drilled and pumped.
Yeah, I don't want the fracking water.
Water. Fracking water. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Fracking chemicals can get into the water table too. So, you know, I don't want to say all spring water is great because the lower altitude springs are
Is there like a website people can find the best?
Well, you go to findaspring.com and then users.
But that's if they want to like DIY it.
Yeah, it's user generated, you know. Find a spring, but you'll find a lot of notes in there. People say, oh, we took this water and had it tested. There's no bacteria. It's clean. The locals have been drinking it for 300 years. You know, you find a lot of user-generated data on Find a Spring. But in terms of purchasing spring water, dude, any water that comes in glass that's like a name brand water that they're calling spring water is going to be good. So there's Mountain Valley. And on the East Coast, they drink a lot of Saratoga water, which is from another, it's like the Mountain Valley of upstate New York or whatever. So number one is just spring water in glass. This is just me. There's people that will dispute this. but I just want to get as close to nature. That's like when I'm trying to find the truth, I'm like, what does nature do? What did God do? Okay, like what would God no do? Human is going to beat God. And yeah. God to me is nature. So, right. Or one of the aspects of God would be
I'm
a manifestation.
I'm pretty sure he was drinking Evian, actually.
Yeah. So, and then spring water in plastic. Not that mad at that, mm-hmm. but in terms of home, you know, travel is one thing.
What
home
if you just drink
thing.
It really quickly out of the plastic? It hasn't been sitting in there for too long.
Well, here's the thing. The way that this is so nuanced, this mm-hmm. conversation, and I love talking about it, but it's like, oh my God, the rabbit hole goes deep here.
Yeah.
If you go to a plastic water bottling plant, mm-hmm. the way that they do it is each bottle comes in a little hard pellet, like mm-hmm. a hockey puck. Mm-hmm. And at plastic water bottling plants, the way it works is simultaneously that little hockey puck is heated under high heat and high pressure and becomes a bottle instantly as the water shoots into it from a nozzle.
What?
That's how the industrial sort of assembly line works.
Wow.
So you're getting already a kind of melted, heated plastic
wow.
in all bottled water that comes. So it doesn't really matter how fast
even
it
like
made.
The big ones that they deliver the water.
Oh, no. Those ones, like those the big 5 gallons
that
ones,
they reuse.
No.
Okay.
They wouldn't be made like that.
Okay.
I mean, that would be still a step above having a Brita filter.
Right.
You know, so the hierarchy, spring water in glass, mm-hmm. right? Then high quality, expensive spring water in plastic, probably okay. Then you okay. have the filtration model.
Okay.
Right? Those little Brita filters, any filter that costs like $40 or mm-hmm. I would say any filter that goes on your sink that's under $800 to $1,000 is probably not doing shit. There's different types of filtration that you can put at the sink or under the sink. Mm-hmm. One would be reverse osmosis or RO water, and the other one would be a water distiller. And
okay.
those work in a similar way in that they remove everything out of the water and create a very sterile H2O.
Right.
It's not really water anymore.
Right, no minerals.
Yeah, which some people say is good. Others say that you can reactivate that water by adding a little sea salt.
Right.
There's things you can do to...
Yeah, I think mine is that, and then it like alkalizes it, but I heard that
yeah.
that
you can
doesn't really
you
work.
Can reinvigorate, you know, water.
Do you believe
that's
in
been
this alkaline
processed
water
like that?
Thing?
If you want to have alkaline blood, all you have to do is just do some Wim Hof breathing, and that'll turn your saliva and your pee alkaline.
What
in
is
about
Wim
20
Hof
minutes.
Breathing?
It's a practice of shamanic breathing.
Okay.
You could do yogic breathing, Kundalini yogic breathing, really deep
is
repetitive
it like
breathing
deep
exercises.
Mouth, like through the
yeah.
mouth, yeah.
Yeah, that makes
like
you,
breath work.
Yeah, yeah, breath work.
Like holotropic breath
exactly.
work. Yeah,
breath work makes you more alkaline than any alkaline water. Okay. Mm. So the alkaline water thing is to me a little bit of a marketing
right.
scam. And I got into it for years and then I dig deeper and deeper and I find out it's not bad, but your digestive tract is actually made to be acidic.
Right.
So,
and doesn't
you know,
it automatically change as soon as you drink it?
Pretty much. Yeah. But I
and
think,
then it can't be bottled because like the moment you alkalize it, then it just goes back to what it was. Right.
Well, like with Kangen water, when you bottle it, it'll stay alkaline. What it loses is the electrical charge. So it has what's called a high ORP, oxidative reduction potential. And that essentially means like, that's something to do. I'm totally going pseudoscience, bro science here. Mm-hmm. But that's how antioxidant it is, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it has an electrical charge, a potential, and that dies over time, as does spring water. When you get spring water right from the source, it's
right.
full of negative ions. It's mm-hmm. living in a sense. Mm-hmm. It has that energy. And that's what like a Kangen or Kangen machine will do also. Mm-hmm. But then it goes flat, so to speak. The water becomes kind of dead again. Mm-hmm. But it won't lose its alkalinity. It just lose its ORP.
Mm. So geeky. What about a Berkey?
Geeky stuff. Okay, yeah. So in the filtrations, enter at your own risk. To me, I wouldn't filter tap water in any way myself unless it was a national disaster or something, like martial law.
I'm
you couldn't,
screwed.
You know, I'm going to drink spring water. But if that's the most convenient, I'll tell you this. I've researched this like a freak, as you might be able to guess. The best filter I've found on the market comes from a place in Laguna Beach called Pristine Hydro. And
okay.
Glenn Calkins, who's a soon-to-be guest on my show, is a huge water geek and a brilliant guy. And he's developed a filter that I think they're $1,000, $1,200 for the like home sink one that strips the water essentially of everything, then adds the right minerals back to it, magnesium bicarbonate and electrolytes and awesome stuff that would be like in the best spring water. Okay. Then it runs through a vortex, which restructures the molecular structure of the water to make it natural again.
Like it spins?
Yeah, exactly.
All under your sink.
Yeah. And so it comes out like the best spring water you've ever had, but it was tap water. So that's the only filter I would ever use.
Be better than spring water?
He thinks so.
Okay.
But he's also basing it on the premise that
it might be polluted.
That all spring water worldwide has nuclear waste in it from the nuclear testing and Hiroshima and back in the day and all that, or that it has acid from acid rain from all the pollution. Mm-hmm. I don't personally agree because I've seen the lab results of the water that I drink and none of that's in it. It's pristine. And the geologists that studied this specific spring where live spring water comes from, it's called Opal Springs in Oregon. They estimate that that spring's about 10,000 years old, which is pre-nuclear testing, pre-industrial revolution, obviously. So I think there are sources of spring water that are totally untouched by man, still prevalent and existent on the planet. He would disagree. For springs that are more susceptible to pollution, I would say the pristine hydro filter would be the best one. And I've looked at all of them, okay?
Okay.
For an emergency or travel scenario, or just someone who doesn't want to go through all that drama, a Berkey's the best one is what we call a countertop filter.
Right.
So that's a big cistern, essentially. Is that the word, a cistern? Cysteine.
I don't know what it's called. Yeah.
It's a big,
I just don't have enough space for it. Yeah, it's so big.
I mean, they're huge. It's a big metal thing. It looks like one of those like commercial iced tea dispensers that you'd have in a restaurant or something, right? But a Berkey has a filter.
And you have to fill it up with water.
You fill it up with water. It doesn't naturally just come out of your sink that way. You fill it up and that's where you get your drinking water. But Berkeys are good. They take everything out. One of the hardest things to get out of water is fluoride. And it's something that there's
Does reverse osmosis remove fluoride?
To my understanding, yes, it does. Other things that are really hard to filter out of water, which is why those little Brita filters and all those things are whack, is there's detectable levels of birth control pills, psychotropic drugs, you know, Prozac and all that.
Even in fish.
Yeah. So tap water is pretty nasty. So if you're going to use a filter, it better be something that takes all of that out, which is really, really tight filtration.
So smart water. No.
But where the alkaline water thing comes from, just to close on that, is because a lot of the really crappy bottled waters are very acidic because they're just totally unnatural by the time they get bottled. And so the alkaline water thing was kind of a reaction to really crappy water. But any tap water is also alkaline because they put lime in it, lime scale, which is like a sort of calcium deposit. Minerals, the presence of minerals is what makes water alkaline in many cases. So all municipal water has to be alkaline. Otherwise, it destroys the pipes. So water has this lime in it, typically tap water, so that your pipes don't erode and become oxidized. Yeah, so it's a whole thing. But a lot of, I used to, when I had the Kangen thing, I would test all the bottled waters. I go spend like 50 bucks at 7-Eleven or whatever, and I buy every bottle of water and I would test the alkalinity. A lot of them are very acidic, so I wouldn't want to drink acidic water of any kind.
So did you test like Fiji and Evian and stuff?
Yeah, Evian and Fiji are about the same. They're pretty alkaline. They're like 7.9, something like that, which is, I think above 7 is an alkaline and below 7 gets into acidic, you know, but it's really more about your breath. So in the hierarchy of water, certain filters, good if you want to go that route. Spring water, best. Absolute worst ever would be, of course, just unfiltered tap water.
Okay.
And the tap water is just an epidemic that's so bad. Because even if you don't drink tap water,
people are like, well, New York water is good.
Where's that information coming from, though?
That's the
coming
state of New York.
That's coming from the, that's coming from the people selling you the water, you know? That's like, well,
they're like brainwashing you in
there. Yeah, how about some third-party verification? I get these things in the mail from L.A., like the DWP, and they're like, here's the annual water report. It's safe. There's safe levels of chloramines and ammonia and fluoride. I'm like, there is no safe level of that. Zero is the safe level. But the thing you got to think about with tap water is all beer, wine, sodas, juices,
made with it.
Anything made with it, yeah.
Or even kombucha.
Ice cubes, all that stuff. So what I look for is if I'm buying a kombucha or something like that, I look for, first, the best is when it says triple filtered or reverse osmosis water, which some like bottled drinks say. Some of them just say filtered water. which is a little bit nebulous. Well, what kind
when I see that filtered water, purified water, I'm like running away.
Yeah.
Like,
no so, but a lot of people don't realize just when you buy like a, I don't know, a Starbucks or anything that's just made with quote unquote water, you're drinking shitloads of tap water.
I mean, even like Starbucks coffee, that's just tap water.
Yeah. It's gnarly.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so, you know, obsessed about that, because water is so primary and there's just a lot of, it's like, unless you really care about your health, you're just like, oh, water's water, whatever. Right. But for those of us that are more discerning, you know, we're willing to go in and do the research and find at least what I believe is best. And I think now I'm really passionate about it because there are so many anti-natural water fake news conspiracies right now working against that industry and the development of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something I'm actually going to do a triple episode on it starting Friday.
Cool.
Yeah,
we'll look out for
it. I'm so pissed when I found out there's these thousands of articles and they're just lying. I'm like, you guys are dicks. This is not, it's not cool. It's one thing to just have a biased opinion in terms of news reporting and journalism. Cool. Be biased. That's still lame and lacks integrity to me.
Right.
But being biased and just flat out maliciously lying against something that's so inherently beautiful and natural and sacred as like a human being's
think of the
sovereign right to drink natural water from Mother Earth. Like, why is that wrong? It's like breastfeeding or something, demonizing breastfeeding as being some sort of perversion, or I don't know what the problem, you know, what the problem is. It's like,
think about the lobbyists, the Pepsis and the companies that own all these bottled water companies. They don't want people
drinking. Yeah. Well, I think that's where a lot of the fake news stuff is coming from, because I'm like, there's way too much of it for it to just be a random trend in like fake news and clickbait. There's like, there's thousands of websites right now all over the planet about Mukunde and live spring water and how he's this crazy kook. And
they did the same with the raw dairy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Do you remember that place?
Rossum? Mm-hmm.
And then the dude got thrown in federal prison for like selling natural milk from a cow. God forbid.
I know.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That shit pisses me off. Sometimes with my show, I'm like, I don't want to be a political show because I don't think I'm knowledgeable enough in a sense to really hold my own on politics. But when politics start getting into health, I'm like, all right, now I'm going
to
do it.
We need
to. This year I'm doing a GMOs episode, at least one. I'm doing a vaccine episode.
Oh, wow.
And I'm doing a geoengineering chemtrail episode. And the water piece, because now that's become a conspiracy to that you're crazy if you drink water from nature. You know?
Right.
Yeah, well, trying to demonize that is just so evil.
Well, thank you for sharing all this. And what is your podcast called so listeners can listen?
Oh, yeah, I haven't mentioned that.
Listen
that's
to
funny.
All of this. Yeah.
My podcast is called The Lifestylist. And The Lifestylist is named that because I was a fashion stylist before. And so I took the best pieces from the best stores and created these looks. And at the same time was building this lifestyle. So I call it the Lifestyle Podcast because it's about learning all of the truths that we've talked about and keep refining my understanding of what works and what doesn't to improve your life, and then bringing together experts that bring in their perspective and verification of the things that I'm exploring at any given time. So my role as the host is to translate complex and sometimes esoteric or scientific ideas into common language that a normal person can understand.
Love it.
I'm like the relatable guy between the woo-woo cosmonaut freaks on one side and the biohacker science nerds on the other side, because I relate to all that, and I'm sort of the translator that makes that
available. We need that, and I think a lot of like biohacking has become like strictly physical, and I like how you bring in the spiritual component to it too.
Yeah, you gotta have it, man. That's the thing. I mean, you can eat an organic diet and, you know, be totally ripped and in shape and have clean labs and, you know, a great immune system and all that. But if you still are jealous of other people and resentful and have anxiety and all of the neurosis, then it doesn't matter how good a shape you are.
Exactly.
And conversely, you know,
if I'll probably screw up your labs eventually.
Yeah. And on the other side, I mean, if you're, you know, obese or have diabetes that you're not addressing or autoimmune issue or whatever, and you try to be spiritual and really serve the world, you're going to be limited in your physical capacity to be the vessel by which the universe chose to use to help people.
Exactly.
You know? So you got to do it all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your light and all of your wisdom in this episode. I think people are going to have to re-listen to this a few times to get all of the information.
I get that feeling. Yeah.
But
I'm always so passionate about this stuff. It's like the rabbit holes are many and they're deep. So
it's important. By sharing that passion, yeah, you help other people become passionate about it as well.
Yeah. And even, you know, I know I rattle off a lot of stuff, but it only takes just a couple things. You know, if somebody just takes one or two things that resonate with them, that they go, oh, you know what, I'm going to Google this and kind of explore and, and find my own approach to some of that stuff, then my job's done. You know, it's like someone doesn't have to do every single thing that I recommend, but the way it's worked for me is over time, just incrementally adding little bits and pieces. And
of course,
next thing you know, from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed is just full of self-care practices that are just sort of embedded into your day-to-day life. And that's kind of the purpose of my life, is to teach other people how to do that.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom.
Yep. Thank you.
Bye. If you loved this episode and want to dive deeper into Ayurveda, be sure to check out my new book, Eat, Feel Fresh, which is now available for pre-order wherever books are sold. As a free gift for pre-ordering my book, I will be sending you in the mail a signed book plate, as well as a beautiful tarot card I created for you. And I will be emailing you an additional 10 bonus recipes. So this book is for you if you are interested in eating Ayurvedically, but want to make it more modern, more approachable, make it work for today's busy day and time. I've taken the best of Ayurveda as well as ingredients from blue zones around the world. I'm talking Costa Rica, Vietnam, Japan, ever in between, because I believe that Ayurveda is a guideline that can be practiced with any sort of eating. So we look at food from an Ayurvedic perspective as well as from today's modern lens. So be sure to check it out, Eat Feel Fresh, a contemporary plant-based cookbook. Send your receipt over to me on my website, iamsaharrose.com. or eatfeelfresh.com, and you will be able to receive all my pre-order bonuses, signed book plate, bonus recipes, and so much more as my gratitude and thank you for pre-ordering the book. Also, be sure to check out my Sacred Self-Care and Ayurvedic Nutrition e-course over on dailyom.com. The links to both of those are over on the podcast show notes. Namaste.